Barnaby is the premier podcast spotlighting people of color. Every week, we talk news, what we've been playing, and tell you who's invited to the cookout. Our show is all about talking about gaming through a prism of blackness because we are the culture. Welcome to Bricago, y'all.
Yo, what's up, everybody? This is the Spawnery Podcast with Khalif Adams. I'm your host, Khalif Adams. Hope you're doing well. Hope you're having a dope, amazing week. Hope you're having a fun time with family and friends. It is now almost time for spooky season because we are now in October. October is now up in this piece. It is now in full effect in the biggest and real ways we know now because it's cold up in this piece. Here, at least in Portland, it's a little bit chilly. The weather has turned. The flowers are now dead. The leaves are turning. All of that good stuff is going down in one of my favorite months of the year in October because it is spooky season and Halloween is going to be coming up pretty soon. So I'm really hyped about that. It's going to be a dope part of the year. And again, just super excited to have all of you here. Rock with me here on Spawn on Me at twitch.tv/spawnonme, doing our thing here, talking about video games, talking about life, talking about all the things in between. And this has been a pretty good week. I hope you have all been having a interesting and fun one. For me, it's been a lot of reevaluation. I think reevaluation is kind of the biggest term. It's been really cool to see so many folks being really honest about their work and about the kind of feelings they're having in the space. I think one of the things that has been on my mind and soul and brain has been about what pivots look like. I think the conversations about doing work for a long period of time and feeling like you're continuing to kind of grind at it and push the boulder up the hill has always been a hard one. I think anyone who's been a content creator for a long period of time has gone through that and continues to go through that. I know that is a thing. It was really refreshing to see a friend of the show, Erin Ashley Simon, talk about this on her Twitter feed the other day. And I've been sitting with that a lot. Like, I think there's a lot of stuff that's in the mix that I have been just like trying to figure out. I think it's always a weird space when you're like, well, is the content really hitting? Are people digging it? Are people really, enjoying the work that I'm doing on the planet while I'm here? And it's always been kind of up and down. It's always been like, I get a lot of fun comments and questions and people asking for my time. Because they feel like I still have something to say and feel like something good is happening here, which I do appreciate. I think that's really been great. But it's also been nice to be able to see people I know who have been hitting it hard for years also just be a little bit tired and be like, yo, I don't know if I want to do this part of the game anymore. Or at least if they're wanting to do something else, they're like, well, what's the new thing that I can do that feels just as good or, you know, feels like I'm making the world better. So that's always been an interesting kind of space to occupy and to think about. And I'm still thinking about all those things in all of those ways and how do we kind of make all of those conversations better. So it's been really dope to continue to see smart people I know really coming to grips with that and trying to figure out ways to combat that and ways to reevaluate, you know, content and what they want to do in a world where a lot of the content that we see, let's be honest, is really bad. But you can make a really shitty piece of art or shitty piece of content, and that thing will get you millions of dollars and millions of views and all that kind of stuff. And we are still continuing to try to do something very, very different in that respect and trying to do really smart work here at Spawn on Me. That being said, we have a really fun show for you this week. We have a couple of interviews to drop for you. One of them is from the folks over at Razer. Razer has come to the table with one of my favorite new devices in the fighting game scene. If you're a fighting game player, this show is especially for you because we're going to be talking about their Razer Kitsune leverless fight stick, which is going to be cool to talk about. We're also going to have an interview after the break that is one from the folks over at Jackbox. Jackbox Party 10 is going to be coming through, and I've been really excited. I haven't had a chance to play it yet, but I got a chance to talk to the developers behind it. So we'll have that right after the break as well. So Oh, right, before the break, we'll do that, and then we'll end off with our show, with our Razer content. But the first thing we got to talk about, there's one major thing that kind of dropped. I know there's a lot of conversations around the overarching, you know, health of the industry, and I want to bring someone onto the show later on an upcoming episode to talk about that, because we've been seeing so many layoffs, and it continue to be 2023 be the best year for games while also being the worst game for developers, or the worst year for developers. So I want to find someone smart to really come on the show and talk about that in a real good way. So we'll be talking about that in an upcoming episode. And last but not least, before we get into the news for this week, we're almost at episode 500. It is a wild time. We're a couple episodes away from 500, our 500th show. I would love to have folks share their thoughts about Spawn on Me. I'll try to figure out a good way to give you all the link for, you know, talking to us or sending us a voicemail or a voice message or something to that effect. So really excited about that. We're going to try to get that on. We'll put that on Twitter, on X. We'll put that on X, so that you can, talk about that, and share some, you know, if you felt like the show has touched you in any way over the past decade, or you feel like you've enjoyed our show over the past decade, now's a great time to, you know, tell us and let me know how you've been feeling about all the work that has been happening here for almost 10 years plus now, on Spawn on Me. And we're going to put together, I'm going to take some old episodes and chunk those out and put those into a compilation episode where we go down memory lane and talk about some of our favorite shows, some of our biggest hits, and some of those things coming up very, very soon. So that should be in a couple of weeks. So make sure you're tuned in for that. But first things we have to do is we have to go to get into the news. And we're going to do that in the 411. So first up, and kind of the big thing that I wanted to talk about this week, is Jim Ryan is leaving PlayStation. Jim Ryan, the former head or still head of PlayStation's CEO of PlayStation, is leaving in March of next year. And it's a really interesting time for PlayStation, the brand, and PlayStation for its fans. Because it is rare that, you know, we've seen a couple of different changeovers over in the past decade of people being at PlayStation and kind of, you know, taking the helm of one of the biggest gaming companies on the planet. And, you know, it is a really cool time to see transition happen. This was a very sudden announcement from Jim Ryan and the team over at PlayStation, who have shared this information in the past week. But it has been a really just like whirlwind of stuff that has happened over the past, you know, 30 years that he has been involved with the PlayStation brand and working for them. And especially in this kind of most recent generation, where we've seen, you know, the PlayStation 5 become the kind of tip of the spear for what Sony has been trying to do from a positioning standpoint, from a hardware standpoint, and from a game standpoint, which they have done a lot of really fun and interesting things over the past decade that have really made them the market leader in some really good ways, and also has changed the ways that we think about their branding. One of the things that I wanted to talk about this week about Jim Ryan's leaving was two things. One was, it was really nice to see Phil Spencer, head of Microsoft and Xbox. I'm sorry, head of Xbox. He is not the head of Microsoft, head of Xbox. Phil Spencer talk about, you know, and share some kind words on Twitter about what, you know, Jim has done for the space and how that has kind of, you know, pushed them forward, in terms of what that means. And it was a nice kind of, you know, handling of this to what you would see from two kind of the titans of the space, from two of the most rival of brands kind of doing this work. And I don't know, it was kind of nice to be able to give, or to see Phil give Jim his flowers while also understanding all of the stuff that's been happening behind the scenes with the ABK deal and how Jim and Sony have been really trying to stick it to Xbox in terms of keeping them out of the spotlight and making sure that they don't have a leg up in those spaces. And I'm sure that there have been things that the Xbox team has done as well that have kind of been counterproductive for PlayStation, but it was really kind of telling just how all of that stuff has kind of gone down. The other thing that I think was really interesting in the overall kind of totality of what this means for PlayStation fans was I had tweeted out a couple of different things right after hearing the information that Jim was leaving. And one of the things that really kind of came to the front of my mind was, man, it's really wild to see Jim Ryan leaving. He's been one of the people who you just automatically kind of tie those two things together of Jim Ryan and PlayStation. But also it made me reflect on some of the folks who not only would be good potential replacements, but also what does this mean for the future of the for the PlayStation brand? And one of the folks who I think would be a really dope person to kind of come up with to maybe take the reins would be Shuhei Yoshida. Shuhei Yoshida was a huge proponent of the Vita. He was a person who, you know, while kind of being more public facing on the PlayStation side, was a beloved, and I mean, he's not dead. I keep saying is a beloved part of the PlayStation ecosystem. He's a person who, when you think of good things in PlayStation, you think of Shuhei, you think of all the wonderful things that he has done and the way he's built bridges across not only a lot of the Western studios, the Eastern studios to the American audience, but also just like he's been a really good ambassador for the gaming space for a long time. So I put that out on Twitter and I was like, yo, it would be dope if Shuhei came through because he has all of these really great qualities about him as a human. And he fills a role that I think is really necessary at PlayStation, which I think is they need a person who's going to be more vocal. They need someone who's going to be more out front. They need someone who is going to be that connection to the audience in a way that when the Shuhei Adam Boyce era of PlayStation was happening, that they had. There was good chemistry there. There was good camaraderie there. There was a good connective tissue layer there between the vibe of the PlayStation fan and a lot of the folks that were in that mix. And it was really cool to see PlayStation just be out and in front and doing that work. And having someone that you could hold a foot to a fire with and say, oh, if I am looking for someone to galvanize, you know, the PlayStation fan base, who is that person? If I wanted someone who could be that person who is not only a really smart business person, but also can vibe out with the fans, who would that person be? And I still think that that is Shuhei Yoshida. One of my favorite people in the industry. I see Nightwing in the chat says, I miss Kevin Butler. Kevin Butler at that moment in time was a really fun spokesperson for PlayStation because he was also one of those folks who wasn't actually a part of Sony. He wasn't a Sony person. He was a paid actor who was a person who was kind of trotted out to be the brand mascot for the company. And what I mean by that is like, and I think the persona of Kevin Butler was actually pretty needed, and it was cool because if you looked at the early 90s, it was a lot of antagonistic marketing that was going between Sega, Nintendo, all of the companies in that moment, and between folks like Shuhei and Adam Boyce, and then you have a little bit further down the line, you had Sean Layden, who was in that conversation. And it's, you know, Sean Layden had the juice for what he needed to do. He was, in his own way, he was the kind of guy who, depending upon how you looked at his work, was more corporate than Jim, but in a way that you didn't know if that vibe was chill. You didn't know if that vibe was smarmy. You didn't know what that, like, the vibe always kind of felt like you didn't know what to do with Sean's energy. But what he did do was he really galvanized the PlayStation fan base and really was one of those folks that had rallying cries. He was a person who would get people together when they had a big show. And you could tell that he was excited about being a showman in that way. You need showmen in this industry. A lot of people who sent me comments about my tweet or responded to my tweet in a weird way were anti that. They were anti, man, we don't need anybody who's going to be like Phil Spencer. We don't need somebody who's going to be running out there and talking to fans and hanging out with people and doing all this stuff and being out front. And it was a really peculiar retort to the things that I was talking about, because I was like, even if you don't believe Phil Spencer, even if you're like the top brass at Xbox are kind of doing it for the gram and doing it for the clicks, which I don't believe. I think all those folks are very genuine in their love for the business and their love for video games and all that kind of stuff. And they play games. Like, all those folks are gamers. They play stuff. It is a thing that is needed on the PlayStation side. There just isn't that person. There's a lot of decisions that have been made over the past 2 to 3 years that Jim Ryan would kind of, you know, give those to the audience, but they would be in the form of a kind of detached video or a press release statement or, you know, on a PlayStation stage somewhere across the world that didn't necessarily feel like his heart was in it in that way, or at least it didn't connect to the vibe that we as gamers usually come to things with. Like, we're a boisterous crowd. We are a crowd who, like, are celebrating the things that we're playing. And it didn't feel like that when Jim would kind of address that side of the fence. And I think that there's a space for it. I think, you know, as much as you may think that that stuff is for smoke and mirrors, I think looking at the previous folks who were in spaces at Xbox, like Dan Matrick, who did years of harm with the ways that he was out front on the Xbox. And you have on the Sony side, you had Ken Kutaragi, who's famous for talking about you needing two jobs to play for your PS3. Like, there's a space there to have a real connection with players. And I think if you've ever been to an Xbox ambassador meetup, or if you've been to, you know, E3 week where, you know, you have all the, or, you know, you have a fan fest, Xbox fan fest, like, people, like, genuinely vibe with the people who are in the C-suite in that way. Now, again, you can have that conversation about, like, or does that actually matter? And I think it does. I think it totally does. I think when you have someone in corporate who can come off and be human in multiple ways, in multiple circumstances, and in multiple avenues, that builds brand affiliation. That builds, you know, connection to a brand, which is what anyone who is in marketing or anyone who is building something is trying to do. Brand affinity is an important thing. You always want people to kind of embrace that and to come with their real kind of feelings towards that stuff. And I think it's important to be able to do that work well and do it and be consistent and also be authentic with it and not be fake. Zhang Pao says, yeah, I want someone that embraces the audience and doesn't mind going off script and telling us what games they are playing. I mean, look, I you know, Phil Spencer was on my friends list and on my Xbox. I see him playing games all the time. But I think to even bounce off that point even more, the going off script part is really important. I think I hope, because I, you know, it's a thing that I have been trying to track down for years. I've been trying to track down to bring anybody from PlayStation on Spawn on Me to talk about the kind of current state of the audience, current state of the space for them, and where they're kind of moving into the future. And you can't even get someone on the PlayStation side to come on a podcast. Our show is smaller, but even if you look at shows like the ones that are IGN and Kind of Funny with much bigger audiences, they can't even get anybody to come over and sit down and have a sit down interview with them and hang out and talk about that stuff in a way that Phil Spencer has done that multiple times on XCast. He hasn't been on Spawn on Me yet. I don't know what's up with that, Phil. But I mean, I'm sure he's very, very busy, but I think that's a thing where you have to be able to pull that information in and build those bridges in really smart ways. I think that that stuff really does come across in a way that resonates with the audience in a way that matters and makes sense. I think the future of PlayStation is going to be up in the air until they figure out who's going to take his spot in March. I don't think it's going to change anything in a big way, but I think what I will say about Jim's time is that between in a technology space, I think he and his team have innovated in a lot of different ways. I think, you know, moving from the PS3 to the PS4 and now the PS5, you can see really smart, innovative things across hardware and peripherals there. I still think giving the go-ahead on the DualSense is one of the smartest things that they've ever done as a brand. Them digging into accessibility with the Project Leonardo stuff has been really smart. You know, they've been at the cutting edge of cloud when they were doing stuff with, I think it was Akamai way back when they started. And I think they've done some really, they've had some of the best games in a couple of generations. The God of Wars, the Last of Us, the, you know, the Horizons, you know, them going and doubling down on VR twice. Is stuff that he can look at when it looks at his legacy and be like, that was a smart thing that we did. And even if it didn't fully resonate with an audience, we tried really hard to do something that no one else on the planet was going to do for the gamer. And I think that's a thing that you have to give people props for and give them some respect for, because that's not an easy thing to do. It takes a lot of people that you have to move the ship to be able to get that to happen. And I think Jim Ryan has done that in a really smart way. I just wish that he had more of those human moments that we were able to kind of see across his tenure as CEO of, or at least the head of PlayStation. So bon voyage to Jim. I think, you know, it'll be cool to see what happens next for them and see where they go from here. But it's really nuts to be able to see, you know, what that means for them going forward, and what does that mean for the future of the PlayStation brand. If you're a PlayStation fan and you disagree with me that Sony needs a person to do that, I would actually love to hear from you. I think, you know, those are the things that I think are important. And I think I want to hear what that reasoning is besides, well, we had good games and good stuff during that time. There's no reason for us to do anything different because we were already winning. I think that's a okay answer, but I think that's a kind of like a little bit of a BS answer, because it doesn't really talk about, you know, what does that connection mean for you as a player? When you as a person are upset about a thing, how do you talk to the people at the heads of your studios or the heads of the thing that you care about to be able to let them know and share feedback in a good way? So interesting stuff there for sure in the ways that those things kind of play themselves out. But yeah, I think those things are going to be really important. So what we're going to do now, we're going to transition over to our first interview of the night. One, again, we talked a little bit about this in the upfront of the show, but we had a really great conversation with our friends over at Jackbox to talk about the new party pack that they're coming up with. If you're a big Jackbox fan, you're going to be in love with some of the new games and mini games are going to be in that suite. And yeah, we're going to share that interview with y'all right about now. And then we're going to take a quick break and come back after that with our Razer interview as well. So hope you enjoy this. It was a lot of fun to record, and check it out right about now. Hey everybody, this is Spawn on Me. We have a fantastic interview coming to you today. I am very excited about this interview because I get to talk to folks who have made a game that has been not only something that I cherish and love, but has been a thing that has brought both my family and friends together. It has gotten me in trouble. It's gotten me cussed out. It's gotten me good hugs. It's all of the wonderful things that you can think about when you have a game of this magnitude in the space. I'm talking to the team from the Jackbox team. Thank you so much for being here. Mike, Brooke, and Tim. So excited to have you all here. Thank you again for spending some time with me today.
Happy to be
Thank
here.
You having us.
Awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. So, Jackbox has been in the space for a minute now. I think you've been, what, 11 years now? Is it 10 years at this point, Mike?
Yeah, this is the 10th party pack. So, this is the 10th game that we've made in that franchise, in that series. So, yeah.
Yeah,
but the company's been around for quite a bit longer. The company's actually been around since 1989, believe
it
or not.
That's what I was kind of alluding to. I mean, the company is much older than the game itself, and yeah. It feels like the game is definitely kind of has not only just become a part of the gaming community's zeitgeist, but culturally it has had a much bigger space in terms of what that has meant. Mike, I'm really curious to hear your thoughts about, you know, where the company has kind of gone and where it started and what was the kind of impetus for making this game that we all know and love.
Yeah, happy to walk you through a little of that. I'll try to give you a quicker synopsis because it's kind of a long story. But 1989, the company was founded as Learn Television. The founder's Harry Gottlieb, and he was making edutainment games. Had a game called That's a Fact, Jack. And that interactive trivia game kind of pivoted and turned into what everybody knows as You Don't Know Jack, which was a successful trivia game on CD-ROM in the late 90s, early 2000s. Company rebranded as Jellyvision back then. And then in the kind of early 2000s, it's kind of the rise of PlayStation and home consoles, that kind of next generation of home consoles. And the CD-ROM market kind of took a decline. And sadly, the company didn't really pivot well into that new space. But one of the challenges at that time was everybody's now playing on a gamepad, on a controller. And so how do you make a trivia game where you don't have a keyboard, or how do you make it so many people could join and play? And it's kind of funny because that same challenge presented itself later. But I'll give you what happened is I'll give you the kind of the quick synopsis. The company shut down in that kind of early 2000s. Founder founded a new company called the Jellyvision Lab. I joined in 2008 to restart the games company. So we restarted as Jellyvision Games. We kind of had a couple different lives in there. We initially made a new You Don't Know Jack and worked with THQ to put that out on all major consoles and PC. Then we started working on social platforms. We were doing Facebook gaming and then some mobile gaming with You Don't Know Jack and some other IP. Then ultimately pivoted back into the premium space. But at that time, we wanted to make You Don't Know Jack. We wanted to make Fibbage. We had a prototype of Fibbage. And we still had the same problem. How do you go play on an Xbox or PlayStation when everybody's got one controller? Multiplayer means my box is connected to your box. It doesn't mean we have a dozen controllers in the room for a party game. And so we developed some tech internally that kind of became the basis of our eCast technology, which lets your phones become your controllers. And once we built that and started building prototypes around it, everything changed. And we launched the first standalone game, Fibbage, in 2014. And we followed that up at the end of the year with the first Party Pack. And we've kind of made an annual sequel to the Party Pack ever since then.
It's been really interesting, and I'm happy you talked a little bit about the technology layers of it, because one of the things that I was amazingly hopeful for and saw some really interesting connective tissue between the work that you all are doing and some of the games that have come out kind of in that era. Like, I was a big fan of the Xbox Live Arcade's 1 versus 100 game.
Oh, yeah. Prime time.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, yeah. My God, why can't we just have this all the time? Because it was something so innovative in terms of the technology and what they were doing. For a game like this now that has definitely felt like it has made the best transition from the TV to the phone to the mobile device, what has been the kind of hardest thing to kind of overcome in terms of that technology layer? Because that's been a really just game-changing way of thinking about it, because everyone has a phone at this point, and maybe you may not have a controller. So I'd love to hear your thoughts about that real quick.
Yeah, I'd love to say it was our genius and our brilliance that, we predicted all of this was going to happen. You know, like anything, I feel like you kind of stumble into some of it. Like, we knew what we wanted to do. And we actually had made a version of You Don't Know Jack for the Ouya, if you remember the Ouya platform. And at that point, we said, you know, there's never going to be more than one controller on an Ouya. What can we do? So we made an app on mobile called the Jackpad. And it, you download it on your Android phone or your iPhone, and at the time there were still Windows phones, and you had to launch that app. You had to be on the same network as the Ouya, and then it would see the controller, and then you could join the game, and it kind of custom skinned to You Don't Know Jack. It was kind of the early prototype, if you will, for how do we do phones as controllers. But it made a lot of friction, and you know, people had to get on the same Wi-Fi. People had to download an app, and you had to wait for it to install, and like all those moments when you want to just get into a party game and have fun, those friction moments like are buzzkills, and they make people bail and like, let's just go do something else. And so that really informed how we did the phones as controller stuff to be as frictionless as possible, make it web-based. You don't have to get on a Wi-Fi network. If you just have an internet connection, doesn't matter what model phone you have, you don't download apps. So that really, like those hurdles, the technology hurdles early on, we tried really hard and learned the hard way in some ways to make it as frictionless as possible. I think the stuff we kind of are challenged with now is, how do we get on more platforms? How do we become a little more mainstream? I mean, we're on everything that can possibly run our games right now, but our games are not really hardcore games. They're not, you know, you don't need a PlayStation or an Xbox to play our games. You can play them on an Apple TV or a Fire TV. And you know, they're a little more casual. They compete with board games and card games and party games in a traditional sense, that same couple hour window at a party or a family gathering. That's where we play. And so how do we become a little more ubiquitous to the mainstream market, right? And how do we get on more platforms technologically so that people who think, I'm not a gamer, I don't have an Xbox, I can't play Jackbox. Well, you can. You have an Apple TV or a Fire TV or a smart TV or some device that can play it. And I think, you know, once we get over those kind of tech hurdles, it opens lots of doors for an audience and for people to play and have fun.
I mean, one of the things that I remembered very, very vividly was the You Don't Know Jack game show that was on TV with the late great Paul Rubens, the host there. And it's one of those things where I continuously think about the evolution of the Jackbox franchise. And I'm like, man, with all the new games that are in this mix and that come up through the different party packs, that just lends itself so quickly and easily to TV and cable and all of those things in my mind. I'm like, man, I want to do Do De Re Mi. Oh,
it's a hard one. It's like Do Re Mi. It's like Do Re Mi, but Do Re Mi.
I said this like 17 times before we started the show, and I was like, my brain and mouth worked, and now it doesn't.
But Khalif, that's what I'm here for. I'm here for you. My job is done.
See, this is why I appreciate you, and I'm gonna bug you about a whole bunch of other stuff. But perfect. Those pieces lend themselves so easily to what I think television could be in terms of that massive, you know, space in there. Has that ever been kind of reevaluated at some point to kind of come back to potentially doing those kinds of things in much bigger ways?
We're always looking at opportunities, and yes, that has approached us, and we've had discussions over the years, and we continue to entertain discussions around that because our games do lend themselves really well. In many ways, they have a format of a game show. There's multiple rounds. You know, there's games have little twists or changes throughout the rounds. There's contestants, there's a host. They're really set up that way. So, I have nothing to announce or talk about now, but maybe in the future we will. But I like the way you're thinking, because I think the same way. I think there's lots of opportunity there.
Yeah, I'm dying to see that become a thing. Brooke, I want to talk to you about your game, because Do De Re Mi, I can't say it.
Say it.
Sing it. Sing it.
Jeez. My brain just like had a malfunction. Anyway.
You're doing great.
I'm trying. You would think I've done this for 10 years. You'd think I know how to speak. but I'm really curious to hear about the game because I am a huge music fan. And music-based games are stuff that I absolutely adore. And seeing that you have now gotten literally the band together with your game, I'm so excited to hear about the kind of impetus for this, the kind of like, what was the thinking behind this, and how hard was it to get all of this to work? Because you're asking multiple people. First of all, we have the rhythmically challenged folks in the world who are just like not able to catch on beat. And
sure.
You found a way to make all of this sound really, really good in the ways you have, and sometimes not so great on purpose.
Yes. Right?
What's talk to us about the game and all the pieces of it.
Well, the game came from our brilliant engineers. Like, it was engineer based. It was pitched by Chase McClure, who is one of our brilliant infrastructure engineers. And he, you know, had been working on this prototype and had built the game. Essentially, it was a early version of it, got everyone into the room when he pitched it and just said, like, now imagine this. We're all going to play this song together. And also, the actual instrument that you're playing, that noise is going to come out of your phone. So it was this just chaos in the most beautiful sense. And I think, again, Mike can speak to that. It was like, I think the company said, we have to do this. Like, this is going to be a challenge, but we absolutely have to make this game. So then my job coming in later is to kind of guide that vision across the finish line. So again, comes from all beautiful, all of our games come from this ensemble feel, this game team that comes together and really makes it what it is. So what it was a ton of new tech for us, like different ways that we were exploring tech. So we had to start off the process by building the tools. So our engineering department, again, Chase, built a whole beat mapping system. We have our instruments. Our instruments are made a handcrafted instruments. And I mean that because our audio team drove out to Central Michigan University and recorded actual instruments being played. Students played them. We recorded them. They pieced them together. Some of the instruments are also just Nate Sandberg, our lead audio, gargling. And he told the story recently that he said he almost died making that one because he was trying to gargle different octaves. So anyways, like, we had this musical tech, amazing team putting together this like complex system of just behind the scenes, like, I'm going to say it, like pulleys and strings and whistles and everything. And then from my end, my focus was on, okay, how do we get the people who have no idea how to play a rhythm game, want to jump in, have fun at a party, to feel like this is a fun and accessible experience for them, while also satisfying people who love rhythm games? Mm-hmm. So that was the challenge that we were met with. And I really think that the team did a great job because we give power to the player. You go in, we have an extensive song list that is Jackbox songs, original songs, and a public domain that has sort of a genre twist to it. And you're selecting the song, and then you are selecting your instrument, and we give you all that information, as much as you want to know. Do you want something easy? Do you want to pick something based on the number of lanes that you're going to play? Do you want it because it's called Nature's Bugle and it's going to make fart noises? Like, these are all options at your fingertips when you're doing this. And then everybody plays and it's chaos, and it works so well in the room as well as streaming because the team accounted for that latency, accounted for a sync up moment where you are syncing up your device with what you're hearing from the audio that you're hearing from your screen. So every song starts with that. Then everybody goes, plays. The tech doesn't stop there, Khalif. The tech keeps going. Yeah. Because we now have a renderer that takes the audio from everybody's performance and renders the song back to you. And that's where you get to see your points. You get to see your combos. It's all with the goal of pleasing this plant that you're trying to feed with your beautiful music. And if you don't do, I mean, like, you're with me. You're still with me. If you don't do well enough, if you don't play accurately enough, the plant is going to eat everyone. And we wanted to make sure that felt as satisfying as if you succeed. and please the plant. All of these things are viable outcomes. And then it's not a typical, if it's already not a typical Jackbox game, it's even more so not a typical game because we allow players to decide how many songs they want to play. So you end your session, you could play one, you're accumulating points throughout. We have drop in, drop out. So if people at the party didn't get to play, someone can leave and someone else can take their spot. So a lot of consideration and tech choices were made to support the experience that we were trying to create, which is essentially a big old jam session. And then at the end, we do have a winner because it's a Jackbox game. And we call out things like the longest combo and winner. And also we love to call out the person who didn't do the best because we like to celebrate that as well.
That makes me really excited because I know... First of all, the fact that you are having fart noises in as an instrument, that's like the thing that I would definitely give to the child in the room. That's like, here you go. You're doing it anyway. So here's an actual way to do it that's going to sync up with everything that's what's happening in the space. But I love to hear the talk around the tech, too, because I think for a game that mm-hmm. is supporting 9 players, I believe.
Yes.
And having so much of those pieces kind of come together all at the same time. And then you get to kind of have this present at the end of the song that you just made together and have that be something that kind of you can celebrate and absolutely laugh around. I just love that that's a part of that conversation. What was the hardest thing in terms of, because getting instruments and making up instruments is really, really hard. It's like not an easy thing to capture all that stuff in a high enough quality that when you're traveling from, actual orchestration to a very small device in your phone that sometimes doesn't have the best speakers. How is it to kind of translate those things over that kind of technological space?
Again, we have an incredible audio team that built up that library and had people focused on like we were optimizing the sounds coming out of the controller. So again, just like I am not the person to explain exactly how it works, but from what I saw, they were just piecing together. When I tell you, like, you're playing the notes, like, it was actually structured so that those actual notes are playing out of your controller. It's not just the same sound. Like, it really is pretty nuanced and amazing. And our audio lead would be sitting there and listening and, like, changing the levels and making sure, like, things were front and center, especially like in that playback moment where you're hearing the player performances on top of some STEM backing tracks. So let's say the game accommodates 1 to 9 players. So if you have one person, you're not just going to hear your performance. The other parts that aren't covered in that rendition will have a quiet kind of STEM track playing in the background. So in other words, like if someone's not on drums or someone's not on a counter melody and you're playing the melody, those other parts will be supported. So it really feels like a musical piece, but you are front and center. You're the star of the show with your farts. So yeah, I think like with all of that, we just really, there's a lot of genuine amazing instruments in this game, but it's also Jackbox. So then we were like, had a lot of choices on editorializing them as well and saying like, is it fun? Like we want people, like originally Chase had listed the trombone as sloppy horn. And we were like, yeah, it's a sloppy horn. Like we absolutely have to call it that. And so we went through and some instruments are represented as what you would expect them to be, like guitar. But then other ones, we kind of took a little, like all the different, saxophones, depending on which one you're playing, the baritone or the tenor, because we have 4 saxophones in the game.
Nice.
They're named Mama Sax, Papa Sax, Uncle Sax, and then the 4th one is Casual Saxophone.
Oh my god, my brain is just breaking and how funny that's it.
But this is where all these people come together. Like, again, I'm not the musical genius. I am the person that's like, I gotta tap the buttons when they come to me and I'm gonna try to do it the best I can. But what can I bring to the table is the gift of editorializing these instruments. So it's, again, everybody brings their talents and their gifts to the table.
I kind of wish that if Dodo was its own game and it had its own box. The back of the box quote would be, "You are the star of the show with your own farts." That would be one of those moments where I'd be like, "Oh,
we gotta revisit these taglines." Do we have time? Can we change it, Mike?
Kicking them out.
Pull it from the party pack. Solo release.
Pull it. Not too late. We gotta do it.
Well, that makes it easy because then Tim, I can make a shirt with that through TKO2.
That's right, you can.
Which now we'll talk a little bit about that in a second because I'm really excited about that. I got to talk to you about version 2 because version 1 was a banger and it was one of the favorite games in our household when we were thinking about kind of what was the thing that we wanted to jump into and play. Talk to me about the beginnings of TKO and how we've kind of leveled up with 2.
Well, I wasn't part of the production team for TKO. Sure. Mike, do you have any tidbits there for the first one? TKO Prime?
As far as how it came about?
Yeah.
It was just one of the prototypes. We wanted to make a battling fighting game, and someone came up with the great idea of making a t-shirt battling game. And then in the same way that Brooke can talk to the creative editorialization, like things fell into place, like shirtality and things like that. Like it just took on a fighting game motif that was pretty amazing. And again, it's the talents of the crew that are on those games that really bring them to life. And from ideation concept to, you know, what you see as the final product, it's just amazingly talented artists and engineers and audio folks and editorial and everybody that, participates in the design side. The funny story though, like as we were building this game, we were talking like, wouldn't it be really cool if you could actually just buy the t-shirt at the end of it? And it was never part of the original plan. It was like this stretch goal that we pushed really. In fact, we had an intern working for us and we're like, we'll have the intern work on some of the stuff while we're cranking on the game. And we saw it through the finish line, and actually at launch we had a way, and it's kind of changed a bit since then, to be a little more professional. It was a little kind of, we put it together with bubble gum and whatever we could put the wheels on the car in order to have it work at launch. But it worked at launch and we were really thrilled by it. And it's actually been a very fun thing, especially going to like conventions and things and seeing people show up wearing their custom t-shirt that they made in TKO. So, all that, and we know it's a fan favorite. So it was kind of ripe for a sequel, and enter Tim as directing TKO 2.
And I mean, that's the thing, TKO is beloved.
Yeah.
So by the greater world and also within the company, like we still play it. So when we started working on the sequel, the design team came together and thought like, let's make sure we keep what we love about TKO, which to me is like, it's a very easy in game. Like you're playing right away. It's one of the ones where you can kind of hand someone the controller and be like, go, you're going to draw, you're going to write whatever you want. You're going to slam these two things together. Maybe not your first choice of a shirt that is just like, yeah, this is my shirt now. And then they fight. So we wanted to keep kind of that DNA. And then we thought, what is not possible in TKO that we could do? And that's where we came up with the idea of like, in our round 2, you can go back into any drawing that's been submitted and change it, like potentially give it maybe a competitive edge in the battle arena. That was really fun. That was where we came up with different clothing items in the game. For any design now, you can choose a tank top or a hoodie. And Khalif, I'm going to tell you, we did spend some time talking about pants.
Oh, stop lying.
TK pants. And then, the design is probably going to go on the butt. Yeah. And we were like, a lot of time looking at butts in a game. We're not completely opposed to that. But in the end, we really liked the trinity of like tank top, shirt, hoodie. So that's what we went with. The reveals of the shirts is always like such a satisfying moment in the first one when you finally see what people came up with. And that's why we have different font choices now, which I love. Like, there's like a scripted font, and you know, some of the bizarre things that people type in when you put it in this elegant script, it's just like chef's kiss. There's more shirt colors. There's kind of a bigger final round. So it was all stuff that we just wanted to take what we loved about TKO and kind of make more of it. And I know the team and myself are happy with what we came up with.
The thing that I always love about TKO, and I'm really excited for two, especially, well, I'm sad that there are no pants, because that means I would have gotten some dope booty on my pants. But what it sounds like to me is, like, because that leveling up of all those pieces that people kind of known and love, like, now folks are just going to go really for the jugular in the best way, right? They're going to definitely go in. And the thing I kind of really love about TKO and most of the games for Jackbox is, like, it's usually never mean-spirited, which is kind of great. Like, it's always a nice kind of, like, you know, nudge or, you know, a tweak at people, but it's never mean, which is kind of great in the ways that you all have thought about the games that you have made and how those things kind of work. So, like, a game that you're making, Brooke, is even the folks who aren't that great, they still feel like they're a part of the equation in a much bigger way, right? And feeling like they are actually kind of bringing themselves to it. And with Tim, it's an easy analog to see, like, you know, I can't draw for crap, but I will be able to, you know, showcase something that looks really, really decent, right?
Well, and one nice thing is, if you're not, you know, a perfect artist, the game is no less fun. And often someone drawing in exactly their style where they're like, I am falling apart and I am so sorry. Often they win because it's like it's no less fun. And I think we do love leaving space for, like, everyone should feel good about it. Everyone's included. You know, you walk away from our games feeling good. But that's the hope.
It's kind of the anti-karaoke where you have that one person who knows they can sing and then they wait to the end and they're like, I'm going to blow everybody out of the water and show you. I've been singing since I was three. I was on American Idol and I'm going to blow everybody out of the water. It's not that.
Here comes Defying Gravity. You ready?
Right? Yeah. Like, oh, I know. I've been doing this since I was three. You know, Oprah gave me some love one day. No, it's none of that stuff. It's like you just go in and do your thing and it makes it really, really, really fun. I love that about.
But the best part is, too, is when people are really good,
yeah,
you can steal their art. Like, that's my favorite part, is that, like, the artist, that it goes into the mix. Like, you get someone else's incredible art and put it on your t-shirt, and then everybody wins.
Yeah, we made some rules in the house where we were like, for anything that you had to draw, you're like, you can't use anything but your phone. Like, don't get that iPad out of here. Don't come through here with that shit, because you're cheating.
Level playing field.
Way too much real estate to be able to do fun things in the game. So those people are banned from playing with us. But it's always one of those things that when I come back to the overall package, and there's some other really fantastic parts of the game for this pack. Fixie Text, which I'm really excited about, because that is just going to be a cluster of things because of all the things of knowing what it's like to be in a group text. That's going to be wild. Oh, yeah. Hypnotorious, I'm really excited about for sure, because I want to just see how that works with a group of folks. And Time Jinx is going to be really, really fun, too. I think all of those pieces that come together in this pack are going to be stuff that I think a lot of folks are just gonna be really hyped to play. What's the things that each one of you, besides your own game, are the ones that you're the most excited to kind of pull in into this party pack? I'm gonna go with you.
I'm gonna go with you, Tim, first.
Me?
Me. Yep.
And so this is so just this is for just party for... pack. Wait, now suddenly I can hear myself.
Oh, somebody might have had their audio up. Go ahead.
Yeah.
And this is just within Party Pack 10.
Yes.
Like, what am I excited about that's not T? So the thing that comes to mind is Dodo Remy, all the music mechanics are so cool and the choice of instruments. I also love the art. I think the art is gorgeous. And you have all these different bird characters that you can play, and you can also I'm still so like, Brooke, am I giving something away? No, we've announced everything.
No, it's out there. People are doing it.
yeah. You can change the bird that you're playing, so you can quickly go through like all the different gorgeous designs that your lead artist, Kyle, came up with. I love that. And like, I didn't work on it. So I'm just a, like, I'm an audience member for that. I love it in the same way that, you know, when it's released, people just coming into the pack fresh would love it. So that's something that, like, I think it's super cool. It's really beautiful. And I can't wait for everyone to see it.
I love it.
Brooke, and shout out to Patrick. Oh. Well, shout out to Patrick, who actually worked on a lot of those avatars. Kyle, yes. Our lead artist, but Patrick also did a lot of the avatar design, especially the nuances.
Love it.
I'm going to have such a terrible answer when I say like all the games are so good. And then I will force myself to also pick favorites. But like when I tell you, like, it's Oops All Bangers, like they're so good. And they really, like, we played recently at PAX West and it was so fun to watch people just get like so excited about each game, because like there is that, that's what the PAX do so well, is like bring something for everyone. It's like, who's your trivia person? Who's your drawing person? Who's the writing person? It's like, there's really something for everybody. I personally love Fixie Text because I do love that chaos. Like seeing it, especially it live populates while people are typing. And then you see strategies form where, like, I remember I was all just like typing one stream of something for a while. And then realizing that you can kind of like perch and watch what's happening and then place your cursor somewhere else and attack someone else's sentence is I'll put that out there. Great strategy. But that game is just such a collaborative, chaotic experience in the best way possible. It's like, it tickles my brain in all the right ways because I think because a lot of us come from improv comedy and it really is that, like, just go, see what happens. And that's what I love about
it. I think a catchphrase they threw around a lot while making that was chaos in the group chat.
Ooh, yeah. And also hearing that y'all were doing improv, or improv is a part of the background for most of, that tells me a lot about all the good snark that's in the game, because it comes through so much through the game for sure. Mike,
Tim and I used to perform together. It's a real problem.
Oh, what?
I
knew there was some good chemistry right there. That's awesome.
Romantic chemistry? Is that what you're seeing? That might not be there, but real stage magic. Well, and the funny, we were doing, this is real quick, and then we'll get to Mike. I promise.
I love it.
We were doing PAX East, and what were we doing? We were unveiling the TKO announcement video. So like everything had been under wraps, and this was the first, like, this is the first game of Party Pack 10. We were kind of doing the conference and we were like working our performance stage where people could play the games. And then we went into this huge theater where they were going to do a panel and we were going to do the video. And only then on stage, Brooke and I were like, we haven't really talked about any bullet points or how we're doing this presentation at all. And there was a lot of shared stage history where you were just like, Tim, we got it. You also had a cold brew. Maybe not your first of that day. And a lot of
had a cold brew
inspired confidence. But it was great. I was on this. It's fine.
It was wild cold brew energy. And then we would just start talking. And then I'm like, I'll give you shark eyes, Tim, if I got nothing else. I'll give you dead eyes. It'll be fine.
That makes me, first of all, now knowing that this is a part of the dynamic, I'm raising my hand. Next time y'all have a PAX West panel, I want to moderate that bad boy just to be in it.
It's fun.
I love
get in there,
bouncing off people and doing that stuff live. It's so much fun. Mike, we'll end out with you in terms of your favorite, game of Party Pack 10.
Yeah, well, when I was a cast member on SNL, we used to always do these activities. Oh, never mind. Sorry about that.
Here we go.
I also have a special place. I agree with Brooke. This pack is really great. Every game is unique. Every game is really high quality. They're really well polished. I mean, it is a testament of doing this for 10 years and getting really good at your craft. And our team and our all employees are just incredibly talented. So I like all of the games, but I do have a special place for Fixie Text, because I used to troll Google Docs in meetings a lot. And I have to catch myself doing it sometimes because I still need the meeting to be productive. And I'm like, it's fun to do it as a gag. And then a couple of people get in there and do it as a gag. And then, it just became so funny to me. I would do it a lot. And so there was a time a couple years back where it's like, I was doing this and saying, like, there has to be a game here. There's a game here. Like, how could we make a game of trolling Google Docs? And a number of people kind of ran with that idea, and it had a couple different pitches and a couple different iterations before it became Fixie Text. And I think it's a really fun game that captures that same chaos and just craziness of when you're done, like, what is it and what does it say and who gets points? And it's always funny. So that one to me just holds a little special place because I used to really troll the Google Docs and really enjoyed doing it. And we now have a game that's kind of that mechanic, which is awesome.
So now I know when Anonymous Alligator is in the dock.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
It's Builder.
Oh, yeah, Mike, right. You're in charge.
Hey, we make fun games here, right? We got to have fun doing it, Brooke.
Oh, I love that okay. is the thought process.
As long as I'm not doing that in the tax returns and the financials and the board reports, like, it's okay. In a meeting here and there, it's okay.
Mike, I'm trying to fill out my W-9. Can you get the hell out of my document?
Oh, your name is now Kim Smithen. Yeah, right. Exactly.
All right, so now I know when the FBI is coming for me. I know who to buck. And be like, Mike, what the hell? I'm just trying to get this document done. My God, I have had such a blast hanging out with y'all. It is so much fun talking with y'all and talking about a game that I love and the newest iteration in Party Pack 10, which I'm super hyped to get a chance to play. I'm going to jump into it very, very, very soon because I think I got a code in my email box. So we'll see unless you've changed that code, Mike, and without me knowing.
You're good.
You would never.
Last thing before we get up out of here is, Mike, I'll give it to you to let folks know exactly when things are dropping, when they're coming out, and where they can snag it.
Yeah, so October 19th is our launch date. Will be actually worldwide release in eFIGS languages, French, Italian, German, Spanish, all of them on day and date, and all of our platforms on day and date. And you can learn more at jackboxgames.com.
I am so thankful that all of you spent some time with me today. It has been an unreasonably amount of fun getting to hang with y'all.
Mike, it was a pleasure.
I love the work that you all do. It really does make the world better. I seriously think that with my whole heart. I think you all do stuff that makes the space so much fun in a world that's always about guns and shooting stuff and all that stuff. You're making really fun products that brings us together in games that makes all of this feel fun again, which is really important to the space. So I want to thank you each for the work that you're doing. Thank the rest of the team for me. I will cuss somebody out when that Fixie test happens and I'm like, what? Why? Why did you do that? Who put an emoji here for no reason? I'm sick of you. It'll be that reason. And I do want the fart saying on a shirt, so I'll make sure to be able to make that
happen. You can make that happen. You'll make that dream come true.
We'll make that happen.
Right.
Thank you so much for spending some time with me today. Everybody at home, we're going to take a quick break and we'll have more Spawn on Me right after this. Hey everybody, Khalif here from the Spawn on Me podcast. Hey, we have been in the market for new PCs for a long time, and for our 10th year anniversary, the wonderful folks from NZXT have partnered with us in a collab to be our hardware sponsors. So, if you are looking for a new PC to stream or to game in the best way possible, go check out nzxt.co/spawnonmebld, and you'll be able to find a perfect PC for you, whether that be the Player 1 machine, Player 2 machine, or Player 3 machine. The ones that we're rocking for our new studio build, they have everything you possibly could need for the best PC experience on the planet. Remember to go check out nzxt.co/spawnonmebld and they will get you set up right. Much love and peace. Welcome back to the show. It is the Spawnomy Podcast. What a wonderful interview with our friends over from the Jackbox team. I swear, like, when you get folks who have worked together and have that good camaraderie and have that good vibe, it is such a wonderful time to talk to people who, like, really enjoy their work and are really good at it. I do think Jackbox continues to be one of those games that absolutely does make the world better. I think a lot of folks, you know, when you're looking for games to play and you're like, I don't want to be competitive, I want to, you know, have fun and laugh and be boisterous and joyous and joyful in a lot of the ways you want to kind of play, it's nice to be able to have Jackbox be a part of that larger conversation. So massive love to the team over at Jackbox for rocking and for being on the show this week. I'm going to call a quick audible because the show is running a little long this week. So what we're going to do is, one, we're going to do a second show this week, and I'll talk a little bit about what we've been playing. I'll talk a little bit about Forza, talk a little bit about Assassin's Creed. So we're going to do that on Friday afternoon. So, you know, this will go up tomorrow afternoon, which would be Thursday, and then Friday we'll do another show, and then the rest of that stuff will go out next week, and we'll also have the Razer interview in that as well. So we'll push out all of those things a little bit later in the week, because the show is running a little bit long. I don't want you to have to sit through two really long episodes. We'll chunk them out and give you some multiple versions of ways to consume that stuff in a good way. So I'm gonna say, look, it has been a damn good show. I think it's been a really fun show. I think it's been a fantastic show. I think if you would like to go and support the show, you could go and follow us on Twitter, follow us on Instagram, follow us on all the places that, you know, our socials live. And please, please, please go subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, where we do all the video versions of our show, and YouTube. YouTube.com/Spawnomy is another amazing place where you can go and snag some dope, dope, dope pieces of content from the Spawnomy crew and all that goodness there. So we're going to get up out of here for this week. If you are watching live on Twitch, I want you to stick around for another 35 seconds or so after we sign off, because I want to play a song because it came up in the chat and I want to play it for all of y'all and hang out for that. If you're listening to the audio versions of the show, if you're watching on Spotify, please make sure you're checking out the stuff and give us a 5-star review wherever you may go. We have a lot of stuff in the mix. I just finished Spider-Man 2. Last week, so we'll have a lot of conversations about that on our upcoming episode after the embargo. I'm playing through Lords of the Fallen right now, also playing through Assassin's Creed, playing through a bunch of stuff for review. Hardware stuff is coming in. All of those things are in the mix. There's a lot of stuff happening on Spawnomy, and I'm only one human being. Don't cry for me. I'm having a blast and having fun times. And you want to check out, If you listen to the ad from NZXT, next week, well, actually later this week, make sure you're checking out at Khalif Adams on Spawn on Me. I mean, on Twitter, at Spawn on Me on Twitter, and check out our. We'll see if we're gonna put it on Instagram. We'll put it on TikTok, but we have our second build for the new studio. I just saw pictures of it the other night, and it is something that you're not going to want to miss once we show that bad boy off. I'm going to have to film stuff to make it look good and all that stuff together, but it's going to be totally worth it once I figure out how I want to showcase it and show it off. And it'll sit over here somewhere on the table. It'll be a part of the shot for the upcoming shows moving forward. But yeah. Massive love to you all for listening and hanging out with us here on Spawnomy this week and every week. Massive love to you. If you're listening on Twitch, hang out for a couple of seconds after the show ends. And everybody else, we'll see you next week or later this week and early next week with some more content. So make sure you check all that stuff out. All right, everybody. Until then, we'll see you, and much love and peace.